So what about you? What is your quintessential taste of Christmas? Missing some essential ingredient yet. We're going to step away from the Christmas story per se this morning, but I think when it comes down to it, this too is a Christmas story. This is Matthew chapter 26, verses 20 to 30. And it's actually the end of Jesus' life. It's words that we know well. When it was evening, Jesus took his place with the 12. And while they were eating, he said, "Truly I tell you, one of you will betray me." And they became greatly distressed and began to say to him one after the other, "Surely not I, Lord." He answered, "The one who has dipped his hand into the bowl with me will betray me. The Son of Man goes as is written of him. But woe to that one by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been better for him that he had not even been born." Judas, who betrayed him, said, "Surely not I, Rabbi." He replied, "You have said so." While they were eating, Jesus took a loaf of bread, and after blessing it, he broke it and gave it to his disciples and said, "Take, eat, this is my body." And he took a cup, and after giving thanks, he gave it to them, saying, "Drink of it, all of you, for this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. I tell you, I will never again drink of the fruit of the vine until the day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." When they had sung the hymn, they went out to the Mount of Olives. Ready or not, Christmas is here. And it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas, even with the snow this morning. And it's beginning to smell and sound and feel and taste like the season is here. Like I said, this is a season that leads with its senses. Most of us have long since forgotten the favorite toy that we received in childhood, and we've stashed away one way or another that lovely Christmas sweater that we got a couple years back. But I'm guessing when we talk about the senses, when we talk about these ideas of how we experienced it, we can recall our Christmases with pretty good clarity. The taste of the goodie bag, the smell of the pine of Christmas dinner cooking, the sound of caroling and Christmas family gathering, the sting of cold air and the needles of the pine tree, the stick of the Christmas orange. And then, of course, there's the endless variety of tastes. The chocolates, the roast meats, and, of course, the dashes of what we now refer to as pumpkin spice everywhere on anything that will hold still for more than 2 seconds. Because who doesn't like a little bit of anise and peppermint and allspice and cinnamon everywhere? When we speak of Christmas, we're speaking out of memory. And when we speak of memory, we're most often speaking out of our senses. First and foremost. This is a century season, after all. its moments of experience and connection are very important to hold on to. In the season of incarnation, of celebrating the coming of God with us, we are invited to sit time and again with moments of the senses. I don't know about you, but information is hard. I struggle even at this point to remember a phone number from the time it takes to read it on a piece of paper, that it takes to dial it into my phone, let alone to actually have it in my head. And the fact that you don't actually dial anymore, who does that? You just look at the contact. Click, point, shoot, there you go. We're not given to that. What we are given is our sense of memory. When we remember, literally put back together, again, remember, piece back together, we are putting moments of incarnation back together for ourselves. And that means that the senses are part of that. The good, the bad, the ugly, all of it's there. And chances are, if you're going to remember something, you're going to remember it in a context of, oh yeah, that's the context. That's what I was smelling. That's what I was tasting and hearing and all the rest. We try to clean up Christmas. Whether it's the first Christmas, Jesus, with the wise men, the shepherds, and the rest of the nativity set, and we conveniently leave out whole chunks of the story, like, you know, Herod. But we also try to clean up our own Christmases. The real events that fall short of the glorious expectations of being Facebook perfect and ready to go. So this season, we're going to be sitting with our senses, the stuff of incarnation, to connect the coming of God with us and reminding ourselves of what has been and what we are going, and inviting ourselves to become that much more sensitive to what we perceive. We're starting, obviously, with taste. And this is a week where food has been a pretty big deal with Thanksgiving. But let's try this. What did you have for lunch on Tuesday? I'm seeing a lot of contemplation out there. It's not really one of those things that we hold on to. Sure, we can remember the last dinner party that we threw, who was invited, what was there, what was served, the last Christmas dinner that we had, maybe even thinking about where you sat, what the conversation was, who was there. You might even be able to conjure an image in your mind. But Tuesday's lunch? Meh. Might not have even gotten out of the truck for that one. While it might be closer in time and space, it's not the everyday that we remember, but rather the extraordinary meal that takes on its incarnation. Because I'm guessing that beyond the taste, we are brought to the table in our minds as much through the recollection of the context as necessarily the cuisine. As I said, this story from Matthew isn't really one of Christmas. We have the adult Christ facing and going into the crisis of his mortal existence. The infant lowly has grown up and has taught and has gone through all of this, and this is more the Lent sort of idea. But we know these words because they're the words of memory. They're our story when we gather around the table. It's a story that I'm privileged to tell every time when I break bread and offer a cup and say, remember. And as such, I think there is something Christmassy about it. Because what Jesus is doing here is taking the power of symbol and saying, when you encounter this, remember that I am here. What makes a meal memorable is not necessarily the cuisine, the chef, or the ambiance, but I think also the company in which the meal is taken. Any of us who have been on a first date knows this. And I recall what we had on our first date. I even still had the shirt in my closet. It was there. And whatever happens with the relationship afterwards, we still remember that first meal. Here, Jesus gathers with his friends, the ones who swore up, down, and sideways that there was no place that they could go where they would not follow and they would not stand up and be true. And he says, while this may or may not be true, I want to share this meal. I want you to remember. I want it to be meaningful. I want it to incarnate something and put flesh on the way of God. And that is what Christmas is all about. Sharing a meal is an intrinsically physical act, after all. We don't think about it in this way, but it's the only essential bodily function that we share with the general public. At least not without breaking a good number of social rules. Food is right up there in the pyramid of survival with water and shelter, third and not far behind. And it's over a meal that we share not just pleasant company, but the necessities of life. With that in mind, the table, whatever it might be, and whatever it might be on it, even I contend Taco Bell, God help me, the table is a holy place. If we but take the time to recognize it for its holiness and the intersection of body, mind, and spirit that are all being nourished in this basic need of human activity. It's holy if for no other reason than when we all must eat. And if we taste the goodness of the Lord within the meal in gratitude and thanks, we're meeting incarnation on the way. That's what we're getting at when we say grace. Thank you, God, for showing us provision even here, even now. What's striking to me in this whole story is what Jesus allots to use along the way. Because they're at the holiday table, after all. They're celebrating the Passover. They have plenty of good options for the symbols here. Roast lamb, bitter herbs, roast egg, vegetables, far more substantial, exotic fares, each with their own meaning and depth in that reality. He could have taken any one of them and said, yeah, this is it. And said, Jesus takes bread and cup, the representational elements of the Seder, yes, but also the stuff of everyday meals and everyday life, and holds them up and with thanks imbues their mundane taste with extraordinary importance. Were we saying at the ritual for ourselves, we probably would have done something different. I might have elected to say, use, oh, I don't know, my mom's butterscotch fudge as this is the sweetness of the Lord. This is something different. But rather, Jesus offers every day to remind that God resides in the everyday. Elsewhere he says, as often as you eat of this, remember. God with us in the commonness of food is with us. And such we remember every day the touch of salvation, of hope, of promise. The table, whatever table, invites us into the revelation of Christ with us, welcomes us to his disciples as members of the beloved body who know him and are invited to incarnate love with him, just as Christ himself came in love to us. Yet, so often we segment Christ's table into a very specific time and place and reality. And we lose that message in our own confusion over who's invited, who we're sitting next to, whether we're worthy or not to come and eat. This essential simple meal with such central importance to the way of discipleship has also often been muddied in the shuffle of theology. And sometimes we just need to clear the palate long enough to say, the meal is just that, the invitation to come and be fed by the Lord, and to know in grace that we are met without anticipation, without expectation, but simply are offered grace where we find it. We can either be so familiar with, this is my body broken for you, that we lose the connection to its meaning. Other times we can be bound so tightly to the rigors and traditions about the meal that we miss the broader themes and possibilities of what it means to gather at the Lord's table. We're not doing communion this morning, but maybe, just maybe, did we do communion through snacks on the benches of memory of time and place, of recalling what has been here. What might it be to taste fully the realities of Christ inviting us time and again to taste and see that the Lord is good? What might it be to taste the full realities of Christmas together? Might we be able to stand not just the sweet and the seasonal, but also the mundane and the bitter as part of God in the world? What would happen if we contemplate Christ's body and blood intermixed with the holy generosity as we eat our way through the season? Certainly not to cheapen the table, to cheapen communion, but to widen our notions of what it means to be celebrating the coming of Christ, who comes and dwells with us, savoring life, come what may. We anticipate the Christ who reveals himself in the meal of the table and of every meal, every day. It is the Christ who welcomes us, not out of rote memorization or just eating for eating's sake, but because each of us is so loved as to be welcome at the table of the Lord. The table, be it sanctified or simple, is a place of holy interaction where we are met by the divine spark, be it in the face of the other, the shared essence of life, or the welcome of the table itself, by the one who provides all and is revealed in the eating. My wish for us in this season, in every season, is that we would find a way to taste and to see and to know that the Lord is good. Thanks be to God.